Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Their very first bill, their most important bill that they're moving, that you talked a little bit about, H.R. 1, is about protecting them, not helping the American public. They want to take taxpayers' money, the hardworking taxpayer, to use it on their own campaigns. They want to change election law so they can change the system so they would be guaranteed that they would always win. They want to have a czar that would take away free speech and what's happening in campaigns. This is the most important thing to them, to just hold on to power.
So H.R. 1, there's Kevin McCarthy discussing the Democrat-backed H.R. 1 that has passed the House, and now the Senate is taking this up. A lot of concern surrounding this bill that's hundreds of pages long. I go back to what Jim Jordan, we played this on the show yesterday. Jim Jordan said, you've got this massive bill here in front of us to vote on, and you're saying it was a flawless election, yet you're talking about all these concerns you have about election integrity. What is in H.R. 1? What's it about? What is it trying to do? And what will it actually do? That's why we have Zach Smith on right now. He is a legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about the narrative that's been out there with H.R. 1, as well as what it would actually do. Zach, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back with us. Good to have you here.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on, Annie. I really appreciate it.
So what do you want? What are the things that you want the American people to know about H.R. 1 and what's at stake if the Senate decides to pass this, Joe Biden signs it?
Well, how much time do you guys have? Because unfortunately, you know, Kevin McCarthy was right. This is approximately an 800-page behemoth of a bill. And so just to get through it, to find out what's in it, really requires a lot of time and is a slog in a lot of ways. But, you know, if there's one point I want to emphasize, it really is the radical nature of H.R. 1 and how it would fundamentally transfer a lot of the election rules and procedures from being set at the state and local level to now being mandated by the federal government. And so just to give you an idea of what is in H.R. 1, what it requires, it would prohibit many common sense election integrity measures. States could no longer require photo ID to vote. It would require states to allow same-day voter registration. It would require automatic registration of all individuals from certain state and federal databases. This means that non-citizens, other ineligible voters could be used. It would also prohibit states from requiring voters to vote in their assigned precincts. It would mandate no-fault absentee ballots to be sent to voters. And it would also prohibit states from requiring things like a witness signature or notarization to ensure the integrity. It would require states to automatically restore the voting rights for all convicted felons, require states to accept these absentee ballots up to 10 days after Election Day. It would require vote harvesting, essentially allowing third parties to collect mail-in ballots and deliver them to election officials. It would prohibit election officials from checking databases to remove ineligible voters. And the list goes on and on, along with other structural changes as well. But it really is a radical bill that would really, in my view, flies in the face of common sense by prohibiting a lot of these voter integrity measures.
Zach Smith is legal fellow at Heritage. Everybody on both sides of the aisle acknowledges that 2020 was a weird election, not just because of the outcome, but because of the ways that you're talking about. The certain states, and they were different all over the country, did things differently in the name of COVID. Is H.R. 1 going to, first of all, take those things that were done in a pandemic and make them permanent? And then second, is it doing it to all states, not just the ones that did these things in 2020?
So yes and yes. In many ways, it will take the things like the expansion of absentee ballots, require that for states to allow that, require states to allow up to 15 days of early voting. And then it would impose this nationwide. And if you consider that it's doing these things in conjunction with prohibiting certain measures designed to prevent election fraud, like requiring voter ID, like prohibiting ballot harvesting, that is saying states can no longer take those proactive protective measures, it really is a radical bill. And, you know, I think there's a few other points that are worth noting, too. It would also change the structure of the Federal Election Commission, currently a bipartisan commission designed to oversee federal election law. It would turn that into a partisan body. It would also take away the authority of state legislatures to draw congressional districts. It would establish certain commissions to oversee the, quote, integrity of different branches of the government and processes. And then it would require any litigation related to H.R. 1 or these new requirements, rather than following the standard process of being filed in district courts around the country, it would require any lawsuits challenging H.R. 1 or its provisions to be filed in federal court in the District of Columbia. And so this, you know, unfortunately, this really does seem to be a bill aimed more for partisan purposes than for, you know, securing voting rights or anything like that for anyone.
Oh, so, you know, we heard a lot about after this past election, leading into it, really, how states are to regulate their own elections. I looked up this. I Googled it. So you're the constitutional expert here. So Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1, the times, places and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But the Congress may at any time, by law, make or alter such regulations. Do you look through this massive 800-page bill and have, you know, constitutional conflict questions that immediately arise to you? Or is this in their purview? If they've got enough votes, they get what they want.
Well, I think if we go back to the intent of the Founding Fathers, there's no doubt that they intended, by the plain language of the Constitution, for state legislatures to take primary responsibility for setting election rules and procedures. And so as a fallback, Congress can step in. But if we look at what types of actions Congress has traditionally taken, you know, the reason we have a single election day in November is because Congress has passed legislation requiring that everyone have the same election day. If we if you look at why we have first past the post elections, you know, the winner takes all elections instead of a proportional election system, it's because Congress has passed legislation to that effect. But really what H.R. 1 does is something that's unprecedented in a lot of ways, in that it really transfers a lot of the nuts and bolts election procedure requirements, rules, regulations from the state authorities to the federal government. And so that is something that has not traditionally happened, and really, in my view, flies in the face of the intent of the framers of the Constitution.
Zach Smith from Legal Fellow at Heritage on the phone with us. You know, the narrative right now from the left is that they're just trying to expand access to voting for everybody. Well, that's a nice narrative. You know, that's one that I even would like to see happen. In your opinion, is there a way to continue to do that, expand voting and make sure that everybody who wants to vote can, while also making sure that it can be secure? Do bills like this address that?
Well, look, I think everyone wants every eligible ballot that's cast to be counted, and we all want no ineligible ballots to be counted. And so I think that's why you have to balance it. You know, if states are going to expand absentee voting, then they need to, again, take common sense measures that H.R. 1 would prohibit. They need to require photo ID. They can require witness signatures or notarization requirements for absentee ballots. You know, they can check their voter rolls against various state and federal databases to be sure voters are eligible, to be sure they're citizens, to be sure they're not registered in other states. And so it really is a balancing act because, yes, being sure as many eligible voters can vote as possible is very, very important. But it's also very, very important that all of us have confidence in the integrity and accuracy of our electoral process as well.
So two follow-up questions to that. The first is, do you expect it to pass? The second is, if it does pass, is the solution to getting this back into a more constitutional intent type of process to get Republicans, I guess, in elected to change it back? And I guess the third question is, if they pass this, is that even going to ever happen again?
Well, you know, this bill passed, a very similar bill, almost identical bill, passed the House of Representatives last year, and it ran into problems in the Senate. And I anticipate that this bill will also run into problems in the Senate as well, which is good, because I hope senators really stop and consider the dangerous implications and the fundamental transfer of power to the federal government that this bill would require. And so, you know, I really do think, Annie, that this should not be a partisan issue. You know, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you should want secure elections. And so, you know, if this bill is passed and is signed into law by President Biden, you know, my hope would be that the future Congress would realize the error of their ways and pass new legislation, you know, basically counteracting many of these requirements. Of course, that's, you know, maybe a big ask, hopeful thinking. But, you know, certainly the best thing to do would be for senators now to stop, consider this bill, and hopefully not pursue its enactment.
And if the federal government does pass this and it's signed into law, the state legislatures cannot override it.
Well, I anticipate if this does pass, you know, there would certainly be litigation over many of the provisions in this bill, I would anticipate. But, you know, the Constitution does provide that, like you mentioned, Congress can pass laws, you know, contrary to what the state legislatures have intended. But again, this law, H.R. 1, is of a totally different type than we've traditionally seen. And so that would be a very interesting, very prolonged litigation that would likely take place in the federal courts across the country.
Well, Zach, it's a pleasure to have your expertise on this issue, and we'll be watching closely to see what the Senate does here with H.R. 1. And I'd encourage people, I came across the Heritage Foundation's Twitter thread. I retweeted it myself. Follow them at Heritage, and you can see out a whole bunch of different things that had my eyebrows raising a little bit more with each following subsequent tweet. And we're glad that you could break that down for us today, Zach. Thank you so much for the time.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on. Take care.
You too. Legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Zach Smith. I mean, it's some of the things in here are absolutely crazy. And if it passes, I mean, it's an 800-page bill, and it's moving through the process pretty rapidly. You should have to sign an affidavit that says that you've read every page of the bill before you're permitted to read it. It should be a legal document that says, yes, I know every word that's in this bill. Or let's just pass, you know, single-page bills. I'm in favor of that. Mm-hmm. Less is more, folks. Less is more. Quick break. When we come back, Tim Jones will storm this castle. Looking forward to talking to him about some things going on the Missouri side of the river, especially school choice and Missouri's efforts to try to lead the school choice effort. I think it's such an important thing. We're going to talk to Tim Jones about that and whatever else he steers us into, as he usually does. So stick around for that. Don't forget, you can stream us at radio.com, an app on your phone, and you can take us with you wherever you go. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Happy Wednesday. It's like the middle of the week. Welcome. You've made it this far. You'll be just fine. We've been talking to Zach Smith, who is with the Heritage Foundation, who's an expert on this H.R. 1 bill that's being pushed through. It went through the House, and it's in front of the Senate right now. And it has a lot to do with election integrity. We've seen Missouri working hard to enforce some election integrity, some confidence in the people of Missouri as well. Let's get Tim Jones in here to talk a little bit about that.
Another great night for Donald Trump.
No collusion, no obstruction.
This is Armageddon.
You know, I brought you Outlander.
Brought to you by Arrowhead Building Supply.
So, Tim, you know, you're probably looking at H.R. 1 there and scratching your head and going 800 pages to fix what the Democrats call a flawless election. It kind of seems contradictory, I would say. And then you got Missouri in their state legislature trying to enforce some voter ID measures and secure their elections more. Looks like we're going to have a federal and a state government showdown here coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, Annie, I'm sure if the Democrats pass an 800 plus page bill on fixing elections and doing election reform that they say doesn't need to be done. I'm sure everything will go swimmingly in the next election if that becomes law, right? Annie, anything but. I mean, this, what a joke. This is the Democrat empowerment plan. And even beyond that, I think it's the left-wing liberal lunatic empowerment plan. I'm sorry to say that, but when you look at the fact that AOC and the squad are incensed, not at Donald Trump anymore because he's not around, not at Republicans because they're not in power in Washington, D.C. Elections do have consequences. They are incensed at their fellow Democrats, aren't they? Yelling and screaming at them about the fact that, you know, how dare they cave on the $15 minimum wage. AOC said, well, just fire that silly parliamentarian. Yeah, just what we need to do under the Biden administration, put more people out of work. That's basically all he's done since day one, is relieve Americans of their jobs and their wages that they need to, you know, pay their soaring electric bills and the prices at the pump. You know, so AOC, I mean, isn't that what a typical authoritarian does, right? When you don't like the rules, you just demand that the rules be changed, whether they're constitutional, lawful, legal, moral, ethical, or not. So, you know, I was listening to Zach Smith. He's a brilliant young man over at the Heritage Foundation, legal eagle extraordinaire. He's absolutely right about everything he was telling you. I've looked at H.R. 1. It's diabolical. Nancy Pelosi filed that two sessions ago. And isn't it interesting? All you need to do is take Democrats at their word, right? This is H.R. 1, okay? This is their number one priority. It is the first bill that they have filed in the last two Congresses. And if this were to pass, you can say sayonara to ever having a Republican president or maybe even a Republican in control of the Senate or House ever again.
Is it going to pass in the Senate?
Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema stand in the gap of reasonableness, logic, and are the last thing between us and Armageddon. I mean, I know there's a lot of my colleagues on my side of the aisle who continue to bring up, oh, Joe Manchin, the reasonable moderate centrist. No, he's not. Joe Manchin's an opportunist. Tell me when Joe Manchin was actually, I know he says a lot of things, and sometimes what he says does actually cause things to happen, right? It did cause Neera Tanden not to be selected as OMB director, right? But there was no vote, okay? I'm saying when the rubber meets the road, tell me when Joe Manchin's actually cast a vote and been the 51st vote with 50 Republicans not to allow a left-wing liberal agenda to proceed forward. Hasn't happened yet. I hope it does, because otherwise some really bad things like H.R. 1 and other really horribly, really bad, terrible, bad bills that are flowing through the House right now are going to become law.
Speaker Tim Jones, I would assume, doesn't this have to get past the filibuster for Mr. McConnell, though?
It does. And so, again, Joe Manchin has said just as recently as yesterday, how many times do I need to say no as to whether or not I would vote to end the filibuster? So he seems to be pretty adamant about that. But again, what happens when an actual vote is taken? Is Joe Manchin going to be the sole Democrat standing with the Republicans against this onslaught of really bad legislation coming down the pike? So, yeah, Ryan, if the filibuster holds, if we hold the filibuster rule, then yes, things like H.R. 1 and other things will not become law. But, for Joe Manchin's sake, if he is going to run again in West Virginia for U.S. Senate or governor or whatever, if he's going to run again for something. And, you know, he's politically speaking, he's a fairly young man compared to some of the other folks up there on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, that bar set high.
Yeah. So if he's going to run again, then why isn't Joe Manchin at this point just become a Republican, right? I mean, he would be more conservative than some of the he would be more conservative than Mitt Romney and Murkowski and Collins on several issues. So it's not like he's going to be a big, you know, fish out of water up there if he puts an R versus a D after his name. Because the Democrats don't like him anymore. You know, he's got too much common sense. He wants us to be an energy independent country. He wants to keep the miners and the other folks who work in the energy industry employed in his state. He's actually thinking about West Virginians. Now, maybe it's all just about his political future, but at least, you know, he's politically saying the right things in my mind. So, I wish Joe Manchin would just, you know, rip off the Band-Aid and just become a Republican and be done with it, and then we can stop playing all these reindeer games.
We're speaking with Tim Jones, host of the Tim Jones Show, Sunday nights right on 97.1, 7 to 9 p.m. on Twitter, at Speaker Tim Jones. I'm looking, in the wake of COVID, we've done this for about a year now. It has never been more clear what it means to live in a red state and a blue state. We're seeing Newsom and Cuomo on the two coasts really taking a lot of heat because of their varying ways of handling this situation. We're seeing Ron DeSantis take heat from the media because he does things right and they can't stand it. Kirstie Noem as well has been taking a lot of heat. And now Texas and Mississippi have both said, we're lifting our mask mandate. And I remind people, that doesn't mean you're not allowed to wear. We're not mandating you can't wear masks. We're just saying it's up to you because it's America. You are in Missouri. I live in Illinois. There couldn't be more of a stark contrast in how these two states are being led. And election integrity is one of those issues as well. What do you say to people who are so obsessed with who's going to be the next president candidate for the Republican Party, who are missing the opportunity for a midterm that's coming up to actually affect some real change in their home state?
Well, yeah, that's what you got to focus on right now, 2022. We'll get to 2024, you know, after 2022. And I think that's why Donald Trump was so smart to, like, leave the big teaser out there. Because, look, by not giving anybody any clear indication of what he's going to do in 2024, what does he do? He does two things. He keeps the focus on 2022 and says, I'm going to be very important in 2022 because I've got this big Save America PAC that I've created. It's got over 30, I think closing in on $50 million right now. So I'm going to put my finger on the pulse of that. And basically what he, by not saying what he was going to do in 2024, Donald Trump basically said, implicitly, without having to say a word, I'm the candidate in 2024 until I say I'm not. Right. So those are the two things he did. And so by keeping the focus on 2022, he's basically saying, everybody, all you folks who want to run in 2024, I know you're all getting your PACs together and your consultants, and boy, they can't wait to start spending your money. Right. Because, you know, for a lot of these consultants and K Street lobbyists, and we've got plenty of them here in Missouri as well, it's all about just having a client. They could necessarily not give a rip about whether they actually win an election and stand on principles and actually pass true conservative reforms, you know, it's, as long as they have a client that, you know, self-funds or raises a bunch of money and gives them 10% of it. So Donald Trump keeps the focus on 2022 and doesn't let anybody get too far out ahead of him for 2024, right? So that is the strategic plan. I think it's brilliant. You know, and whether it's Ron DeSantis or Kristi Noem or Governor Greg Abbott, I think so many Americans stood up yesterday and cheered when Governor Greg Abbott had that press conference and was like, it's time to rip off the mask, America. You know, reminded me of that. Remember that M&M commercial they play around the holidays sometimes where, like, the brown M&M walks in? This may not be PC right now. I don't know. We could get canceled for this. But the brown M&M comes
Wait,
in.
You still have time to not say what you're about to say.
Well, and then there was a green. Then there was a green and a red M&M. Okay.
Yeah.
And the green and the red M&M, they see the brown. They think that that M&M doesn't have the candy coating on it, right? They think it's, like, just got the chocolate, yeah. Right? So the green M&M rips off his green coating and says, "It's going to be that kind of party." Assuming that, like, they're all, like, not wearing their clothes, right? So
yeah.
Anyway,
right.
I knew that's where this conversation was going.
PC enough? I hope I did. You know,
yeah,
I may have just canceled all of us. Anyway, I kind of felt that level of exuberance. Like, Greg Abbott, you are speaking to not just red state America, but don't you think Greg Abbott yesterday was speaking to all of America, Annie? I mean,
yeah.
I know there's some people.
Somebody has to go to crack
yeah.
that ice. Somebody has
yeah,
to get in there and make it happen.
Maybe some people enjoy living like sheeple. We're closing in on over a year now, right, that we've had to deal with this. We've had to listen to flip-flop Fauci, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, wear three masks, wear two masks, pull them really tight, you know? I mean, you know, do this, do that, get vaccinated. Remember when the vaccine, first it was 15 days to slow the spread, right? Then it was 365 days to slow the spread, just about what we're approaching. Then it was, once we get vaccinated, everything will be great. Then now it's, well, even when everybody's vaccinated, we still can't go see grandma at the holidays and you still got to, what? No, everything is down, down, down. Missouri is leading the nation. We have the second lowest PCR counts in the country right now. They are closing COVID-19 wards all across the state of Missouri in hospitals. You know why? Because they're empty. So where is this being reported that we are finally defeating this virus? I don't know if it's through herd immunity. I don't know if it's through vaccination immunity. I don't know if it's through the natural cycles of a virus, because let's remember, that's what COVID-19 really is. It's not something ultra special. It was very transmissible, but it comes from that rhinovirus family, and it's now running through the same kind of tracks that other viruses have in human history, except to this point where we have never before quarantined the healthy. We did at that time, and look at the effects it's having on our young people and our children and on suicide and depression rates. We truly are at the point now where the cure in many areas, especially the psychological effects of Americans, is becoming much worse than the virus. And don't even get me started on the economic devastation.
Tim, when you look at the red state versus blue state comparison, do you want people to pay a little bit more attention to their local governments, to their state? You've served at you were the Speaker of the Missouri House. A lot of change can be affected a lot quicker in those local governments than the glacial pace of the federal government.
Absolutely, Annie. And we saw a lot of common sense being reflected on the local level, didn't we? Those races, that those electoral systems that the Democrats haven't yet been able to affect. They're focused right now on H.R. 1. They want to first nationalize all elections, because then they won't have to worry so much about the state. So, number one, you got to defeat H.R. 1. But number two, you got to participate in your local elections. And look how well common sense conservative candidates fared all across the country. Republicans picked up state legislatures. Yeah, I mean, that continues to be the untold story. Republicans control the majority of legislative chambers in this country. And they did it in weird places. They now have a trifecta in New Hampshire, of all places. Republicans control the governor's mansion, the House, and the Senate in New Hampshire. If they can do it there, Annie, they can do it in the People's Republic of Illinois. Yeah, you heard it here first.
Man, that's great news. We're taking that to Illinois policy. We're taking that to Governor Pritzker, your quote. And we're going to say Speaker Tim Jones from Missouri said it, so you have to do it.
Yeah, it can be done.
On H.R. 1, just because you mentioned it before we go here, are you watching what Missouri's doing as far as passing election integrity laws? Do you like what you're seeing? Do you not like what you're seeing? Do you wish they would do X, Y, Z? What's your opinion?
So I believe we have an excellent Secretary of State, Jay Ashcroft. He has done a fine job in office. He obviously has done a fine job because the Missouri voters returned him to that office with the highest vote margin, I believe, in the state this last cycle. He's running a very efficient office. He works with the legislature, right? And let's remember, Missouri, unlike some states like Pennsylvania, Missouri remembers that the elected legislators are the ones who are supposed to be writing the election laws, not the Supreme Court, not some other statewide office holder. But Jay Ashcroft does work with the legislature and makes suggestions to them and recommendations for specific legislation. I know there's some significant bills moving. The biggest thing that we need to get done in this state, which our voters have voted for and passed, I think 70%+, the legislature has passed multiple bills on this, and that's voter ID, voter photo ID. Do you know, Annie, that is like a universal, like almost 80% issue amongst voters, Democrats, Independents, and Republicans. It's the party, it's the far left wing of the Democratic Party that has concocted this false narrative that voter photo ID is somehow racist. Well, if that's true, then the DNC is racist because they require a photo ID before you can get into the conventions back when we used to have them. So if it's good enough for the DNC, it should be good enough for the state. Missouri passed a constitutional amendment. It passed with flying colors, but they needed to pass enacting legislation through the legislature. Every time our legislature passes enacting legislation, I think it's happened at least three times now, our Supreme Court, which tilts to the left because we had Democratic governors for so long in this state who appointed these judges, and we're not quite to the point yet where Governor Greitens, Governor Parson have been able to kind of tilt that balance back. They keep ruling that unconstitutional. So they're trying to do it again this year. They're trying to follow the law of the land in states where voter ID has been ruled constitutional. And I hope they get it across the finish line. That is probably one of the biggest ways to protect the integrity of your electoral system is to have a voter photo ID law. That will protect a lot of the sanctity. It'll make sure it's one person, one vote, which is exactly what the framers intended.
Tim, I don't have a lot of time left, but I wanted to get this question to you. What's Missouri's? Missouri's leading a charge here in school choice and in the idea of investing in the student, not the, let's just be honest, teachers union. What is the Missouri standpoint right now? Where are they at with the school choice?
A couple bills, Andy, right now. One is pending in the House. I'm sorry, they just got it out of the House. They got it out of the House by the skin of their teeth. And back to your earlier question about electing the right legislators, it's not just enough these days to say, oh, someone's got an R or a D after their name, so I know what they are. You need, if you're voting for Republicans, you need to make sure they're conservative Republicans. You need to make sure they're reformer Republicans, people who will pass education reform. We have 117 Republicans in the Missouri House. The minimum number required to pass a bill is 82. The education savings account, education reform bill last week in the House, 82 votes on the number. I mean, what the heck? I don't know what is wrong with these Republicans who won't vote Republican. It's in the platform of the state and of the national party. Education reform is. Huge kudos and credit to Speaker Rob Vescovo, who's from right here in our listening area, Jefferson County, Majority Leader Dean Plocker, right here in St. Louis, and Representative Phil Christofanelli from St. Charles. They ushered that through. It was a heavy, heavy lift. Thank you to all the Republicans that voted for it. The Senate now will consider that bill, and they've got a big companion bill as well that has some charter school expansion, has some other options in it. So these ideas are in the Missouri legislature every year. I fought for them. We passed a couple bills. Nixon vetoed them, but now we have a Republican governor. We can get this stuff passed. We lag behind the rest of the Republican red states on education reform because, yes, even here in Missouri, there is a dreaded, horrible, evil, unholy alliance of teachers' unions, of superintendent associations, and of left-leaning school boards. Once again, Annie, to your point, local elections are so important. You got to tilt the balance of these school boards. You got to have the right superintendents in place. Everybody should be thinking about the child and not just about the teacher pension program.
Yeah, amen to that, 100%. Tim Jones will be listening Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m., right here on 97.1. And thanks for the time today. Lots of fire, as always. We appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, Annie. Thanks, gang. Great show.
Talk to you soon. Tim Jones, at Speaker Tim Jones on Twitter, and I call it the Thunderdome of Twitter. I have not graduated to that level of Twitter yet, but if you want to know what's going on locally and nationally, you can see it there at Speaker Tim Jones on Twitter and follow him in all of the different places that he tends to pop up. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of the Annie Fry Show in just a minute. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Glad to have you here with us on another beautiful day. I think it was Sunday. I looked at the 10-day forecast, and every day had a big, bright orange sun on it.
Yes.
That's a good feeling, right?
Oh, the best.
It's awesome.
The best.
It's awesome.
How's it changed your lifestyle right now, Katie?
Oh, I'm outside in my muddy backyard for at least an hour a day with my dog.
Muddy Marty?
Yeah, Muddy Marty. But it's just everything. Like, coming into work, I'm really happy because it's bright and sunny and the weather is nice. I have my windows cracked a little bit. You get to spend some time outside. It's just, beautiful.
Does it change your lifestyle with your kids and Ryan to be able to let them outside and not have to, like, bundle them up into seven layers of things to keep them warm?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I don't spend any more time outside at all.
What?
But my kids do, which means I get more quiet and peace time, which I love.
You don't want to go outside?
No, I mean, a little bit, but not. If they go outside, that's my time to sit inside in the quiet.
And zen out.
Does your wife play with them outside?
Not really. It's like before dinner. If we can get them to go outside for a half an hour, that's when we actually get to talk and, you know, consume life together for once. But
you just lock your kids outside.
I guess we go outside on the weekends, but weekdays, it's like, give me a half an hour.
Mm-hmm. You go to the Facebook page right now, you can see a picture of Katie snuggling a puppy.
Yes.
How's it going, Katie?
Little Oscar. Oh, my God.
Sue Thomas's new bulldog?
Yes, an English bulldog. And he is just the most perfect amount of squish. And whenever...
Do you hear this in her voice, people?
Oh, I miss it
so much. She had a puppy. How long ago was Marty puppy size?
He's 8 months old. So it was 3 months ago, 3-4 months ago. He was still very, very little.
Can you hold him now?
No, I can't. He's 55 pounds. David can. David, like, carries him around, but it's like... But David does it to show Marty who's the boss.
Is that what he did to you?
That's what he did.
So David just picks up the dog to show dominance.
He's like, look, Marty. There's David one
carries
king
Katie
in this
around
jungle.
The house, and Ryan gives his wife an allowance.
Yeah. But
Marty was, I mean, Marty, his growth was crazy. I know that you
it's
guys.
It's a lab, a black lab, right?
A black lab. And then whenever I held little Oscar, this squishy brick that is just all width and no length, I'm like,
you can see a picture on the Facebook page. And I told Katie, I go, does it have you won another puppy? Did he give you a little bit of puppy fever while you were holding the puppy?
Yes, absolutely. Because then you can smell, they still smell like a puppy and the puppy breath. Like that, in that moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, sign me up. Where'd you get him? How can I get one?
Unpopular opinion, I hate puppy breath.
No!
I think it smells like skunk.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't think puppy breath is any better than any other dog breath.
When you're holding that puppy and you can remember when you're holding your own puppy and you start holding another puppy. And yes. I told Katie, alert. This is how you end up pregnant with your fourth child. You see a baby and you're like, oh, can I hold? And then you hold the baby and then you smell the baby and you squish the squish.
Yes.
And it's just, it takes over your senses. And then you're expecting in June. So that's how that goes.
And then you're pregnant.
Is that how that happens?
That's where babies come from.
It was funny because there were a group of us out there. It was me and then Frank Ladd and Trisha and Denise.
Kind of the morning crew, right?
Yeah, it was all the morning people out there with me. And every single time one of the women held the bulldog, we all were like carrying the bulldog, like shaking him, and
it's a weird natural thing.
Like we're just like, oh, he's so cute. And then Mark Cox got a hold of him, and he's like, yeah, he's great. Like, give him a couple pets. And he's like, all right, gotta go.
He's gotta get in good practice. He's got a grandbaby on the way.
True, very true. Gosh.
It does change you. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I'd love to hear from some people specifically on the chat here. I think the grandparent thing is. It's the most interesting phenomenon to me because when you become a grandparent, you will have flashbacks to your experience as a parent, but you have so much less responsibility. So you're so much more, but your emotional investment outweighs the financial investment, the lack of sleep investment, all the time that goes into it. It's fun to watch people become grandparents for the first time. It's something that is just kind of adorable in its own way, especially I'll call out my own father-in-law. When my son was their first grandbaby, it was the first grandbaby on both sides. And, you know, he's like the most kind and lovable person. He just doesn't act like he wants people to know it on the surface. And it was so fun to watch him. He is the biggest pushover in the history of pushovers. Like, oh, you want to go outside and walk laps around the house? Let's go do it. We'll just do whatever you want to do. And I look at my husband, I'm like, this is how you were raised, right? And he just looks at me like, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a different time. Growing up, we grew up in the 80s, and Katie, you grew up in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just the amount of, I think, worry and anxiety that surrounds raising kids now. I didn't raise kids in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, like Ryan, you're talking about putting your kids outside and sitting inside the house for 30 minutes. You have a great neighborhood, but that gives me anxiety to think about doing that at my house because of a busy street that we live on. But good grief, I would in the summer get up and go on my bike and ride into town and come back when it was dark and I had no phone. There was no way anybody could contact me. If I broke down, I'd just have to figure out how to get home myself. And that's mm-hmm. just how we did it. It was so incredibly different right now. The worries and is it more dangerous now than it used to be, or do we have more information now than we used to have, or does the fact that we have more information now make it more dangerous than it used to be? It's kind of a cyclical process.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Bryce Hill is going to join us. He's with the Illinois Policy Institute, and he's going to talk to us about that pension crisis that continues to plague the state of Illinois. How much is it going to cost you in the state of Illinois? We're going to do that. And plus, Katie, I see you have an article here from NPR, which is where we get all our real information. It says, there's never a right time for a baby, but these questions may help you decide. So hopefully I haven't made a bad decision.
We'll
you can
see.
Ask me those questions when we come back. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.